Hey everybody, I made a complete gaffe when I uploaded this episode the first time and only uploaded a 1 minute sound grab, so my apologies for the mis-upload there. This is now the full length episode for episode 3 of the Passion for Sound podcast. I hope you enjoy it and sorry about the error. Welcome to the Passion for Sound podcast. If you'd like even more audio related content, make sure to check out Passion for Sound over on YouTube. But for now, let's get into the conversation. Welcome, Chris, for another episode of the Passion for Sound podcast. We left a teaser and a cliffhanger at the end of the last episode, which was that you had a gripe you wanted to share. So let's just launch straight into the gripe. Hit us with it. What's going on?
Okay. So my gripe, and this is from a consumer perspective, it is every single manufacturer is putting their pricing up minimum 20%.
Yep.
And as a consumer who just loves to buy new things, you know, and as a wholesaler, I have to say that from the point of December 31st to January 1st, I find it very, very difficult to warrant a 20% increase in all products because I'm not earning 20% more. No one else is earning 20% more. Maybe some people are, but you know, I appreciate them, but I can't see the value in these people requesting 20% more.
Yeah.
I realize that the cost of doing business is higher and the interest rates are going up and raw materials are going up, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But why aren't these companies going for the 5 to 10% increases, or alternatively, why don't they just put through a new model? Just put a Mark II written on it. I don't care.
Well, you know what would happen then, though? Then somebody in the channel somewhere is going to tear it down and go, there's absolutely no difference. What are they doing? And they'd get slammed for that one.
100%. But at the same time, that channel member will also understandably write, why am I paying 20% more for the same product that I could have bought 20% less last year?
That's totally true too. Totally true. Yeah.
And it's honestly, as someone who loves to buy hi-fi too, I can't see the perception changing in a short period. Which is, it is what it is and they have to do it. But at the same time, you know, we all need to do business. And I don't think that these guys are going to be getting the sort of sales that they plan to get if they put their pricing up in such a very, very...
an extreme way, form. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you reckon there's some opportunism going on? Because I know the reason I ask that, I know one... designer manufacturer that I spoke to, he told me that the cost of aluminium went up literally 100%. And so he's making products that have big aluminium, like machined housings and casings for things. So it's a massive hit on him. But then I'm turning around thinking about there's lots of products on the market that might have a thin, basic kind of stamped aluminium casing that really isn't going to be that much of a difference. Like if it's going up even 100%, it's probably only a few bucks.
Yeah, look. It's like our conversation last, the last conversation that we had. I feel as if, with wholesale and the margins that we put in for these sort of guys, the margin's still there.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously these people say, okay, we need to put this at this price point. So surely they're saying, okay, well, they're putting this price up, so maybe we should put this price up too.
Yeah, I wonder about
that. It's probably a Me Too thing too. I don't know, but...
I had recently the review for the HPA 4 from Benchmark, and I bought it secondhand, but I bought it just before there was also going to be a brand new product price rise, and they'd said it's going up by this amount. And I have to admit that at the price that it was competitive. At the price that it is now, I don't know so much, because I haven't seen any of the direct competitors. So, you know, that's sitting at the level of the Burst & Soloist GT. It's sitting at the level of the HPA One from Past Labs. It's sitting at the level or above the level of the, I've got behind me at the moment, the SPL Phonator XE. And all of those amps, I haven't seen price rises on any of them. I've actually seen a drop on the Phonator. And so I don't know how someone like Benchmark is going to continue to remain competitive if there's that big of a gulf now between their products. It's going to be interesting to see.
Well, yeah. Look, a lot of them are kind of saying, okay, so we need to put the prices up. This is our normal competitive product or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's happening. But at the same time, you know, I have to say that I was brainstorming with the other half the other day, and we were trying to think of what can we do to encourage more people into, you know, the high-end audio or whatnot. And really, millennials are really interested in this product. Mm-hmm. or at least not product in particular, but in the
hobby, know,
hi-fi
and, yeah,
and whatnot. And if we price them out where they don't particularly have the capacity to purchase these sort of products, it's going to become unobtainium. It's not going to become, you know, oh, look, you know, I'm going to build myself something. I don't see it.
I don't know if you can talk about this, but are you seeing any of these sorts of rises coming through your companies that you distribute, so your Chords and your Mezzes and people like that?
If all of the products that we distribute have gone up in price.
Okay.
And as you know, as a distributor, I completely accept that they need to do that, but at the same time, you do notice right at the very beginning that these products aren't really, you know, moving helter skelter like they used to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it is what it is, but yeah, it's not great.
And is this the time to actually start cutting prices and maybe moving more units because people are getting a bit tighter in the wallets rather than raising prices? But I mean, it all depends on the margins they've got to work with, of course.
Your pressures as far as affordability is happening all over our market in Australia. So, yeah, I think it certainly is something that would be worth considering. Mm. But at the same time, you know, everyone has their various costs that they need to cover and markets. You know, we do work in a global economy, and yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah.
Anyway, because as someone who would like more people to be able to, you know, touch, feel, have high end audio,
mm-hmm.
it is difficult to say that you know, now you can have something because it's just not possible.
Yep. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation, and I'm just trying to think if I've seen any of those increases happen at the low end of town from the Chi-Fi stuff, and I don't think it's happening there at this point. Whether it's going to come through, I'm not sure, but they seem to keep churning out, for better or worse, they keep churning out their, you know, their Mark IIs, their Mark IIIs of the same old products with a, you know, little tweak here, a little tweak there, but at a pretty similar price, if not sometimes actually less price. So the other thing that it's doing, and again, for better or worse, is I think it's driving people into buying maybe the Tri-Fi stuff as their entry point rather than going for one of the different brands, one of the European brands, or wherever it might come from. So I guess at least there's still an entry point, but then is it the best entry point for people? Is it going to actually engage them in the sound the same way that I'm trying to think of an example, like you could go out and buy a topping or an SMSL amplifier for probably less than you could now buy the entry level from Shit Audio, at least when I say entry level, probably going to something like the Asgard 3. I know which one is going to be more fun to listen to based on my experiences. So it's curious for me to know which one's actually going to be bought by people, and therefore what's the impact going to be on their long-term engagement in the audio world. I don't know if it's going to impact that long-term or not. It's an interesting point.
Well, you know, in the end, if Chi-Fi seems to gain sales from the joint marketing effort of, you know, your sort of mass hi-fi audio products.
Mm-hmm.
So if they all sort of lose clout being unaffordable and unobtainium, what have you, those guys are also going to lose a lot of what you know, the sort of thing that we'd really, really like to see, which would be product for the masses.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's...
Definitely a fair enough gripe. I think a lot of people are struggling with that one at the moment. And maybe it's a nice segue into something I wanted to talk about tonight, which is now the time to go DIY? Because I'm not necessarily seeing the increases
Why not? Why not? Because, I think that if people go DIY, they can not only get a better handle of and perspective of what they're playing with, but they also can, you know, get appreciation for the costs of this and that and the other and their own time, their own expertise. Great, do it.
That's my thinking as well. Like, it's for me, I still don't consider myself someone that could actually build an amplifier with no kit in front of me, but I now understand my way around an amp. I can understand that this is doing this and this is doing that. And it's all come from doing DIY kits from places like Bottlehead, Ellakit, and I've just picked up a new one. This is why I want to talk about it. I've just got a new one come in from, it's a brand here in Australia called Redrew, and they're doing it's a single-ended triode amp. And what's really, really cool about it is that the way he's designed it, it's a solderless kit. And so what you've now got is the ability to buy a kit tube amp anywhere from no soldering required. It's literally just plug the pieces together, screw it together, and you've got yourself an amplifier, but you're also paying less for it because someone else is not having to do the assembly, and the shipping's obviously it's a smaller box and blah, blah, blah. So you can go from that literally solderless approach. Then you can move to something like an Ellakit where it's all laid out on a circuit board and you just have to match the part to the outline on the circuit board and then you solder it. Or you can move all the way to a Bottlehead where it's kind of point-to-point wiring, so you kind of need to know a little bit more about what you're doing, get a bit more careful. Not that you don't have to be careful with the Ellakit, but it's a bit more kind of join the dots than it is with the Bottleheads. And so all of a sudden, if you wanted to buy yourself and build yourself a tube amp, you've now got different levels of expertise for different people, which I think is kind of cool. And maybe now's the time for people to get into it because you're not having to pay those excesses on top of what we're used to paying on other brands and other products to get into the DIY world. So I thought it was an interesting one to raise people's awareness of.
But did you do it?
I've built now the Bottlehead Crack, the Bottlehead Sex, the Bottlehead Mainline, the Bottlehead Cracker Tour, the Ellakit 2-8200Rs up behind me here. I don't know if you can see it on the screen at the moment. And I've got the kit version of the Redrew SE5 just come in. So I'll be taking some video of it in its unassembled form, and then seeing how it's like, what it's like to build it up, so I can actually talk about it on the review and say it's easy, it's not easy, here's what to watch out for, etc. But the other thing that the two things I think that I really love about DIY, one of them you've already mentioned, it gives you that sense of your way around an amplifier, what's going on in there. The other thing is, so often I see people comment about the fact that, you know, every amp sounds the same if it measures the same and blah, blah, blah. We've gone down that path. I think in our first episode, we talked about that a bit, but, or maybe we didn't. Maybe that was from the roundtable that I do with the other reviewers on YouTube. But the thing that was really cool about building my own amplifiers with the kits was when you decide to change a capacitor or a resistor in the circuit path, you actually hear that it makes a difference. You pull out that one, you put in this one, you go, oh, the whole thing sounds different now. And you start to kind of appreciate the impact that the choice of a potentiometer, the choice of a capacitor, those things actually have a significant impact on the sound and the cost as well. Like if you're spending, I was looking for some capacitors the other day for the main line, and I I think I could have, if I'd wanted to, and I didn't do this, I could have spent about $500 per capacitor. And there's probably others that I didn't even look at because I knew they were astronomical. But yeah, you can spend a fortune on caps and things like that if you want to. But I think it's really cool that people can experience it without spending that sort of money. You can experience the fact that these things all do make a difference. And I think that's kind of cool.
Okay. I'm gonna throw a spanner in the works, yeah. Because while I appreciate people who, you know, as someone who worked at Dick Smith and sold kits to, you know what, you know, showing people to appreciate building their own speaker and all that sort of stuff. This industry is still in dire need of making a profit,
mm-hmm.
and they can't make a profit just from enthusiasts.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially what we're going for here is enthusiasts.
That's true, yeah. Because DIY, yeah. you have to be so into it that you're prepared to build your own, yeah.
Yeah, you know, the guys that I know who, from professional sort of backgrounds,
mm-hmm.
they don't have the time to build their own this, that, and the other. They say, I've got a budget of this, and what do you think I can get?
Yeah.
And they want something good?
Yeah.
They don't want to build something? I completely appreciate that because at the end of the day, I like cars, but I'm not going to build a car.
Yeah, and that is a fair point. Like I was saying to someone recently that I've built, as I said, all those different bottlehead kits, but I've only ever tried to build one since we had a toddler. And I won't be doing it again because trying to fit it in when you've got a toddler and like I had to do it all late at night and often I didn't put a work light on, so I was working in just normal house lights and I made mistakes because the little coloured bands on the resistors all look the same colour if it's not brightly lit. When I say look the same colour, like the difference between a brown and a red, for instance, is hard to tell in not, you know, a bright work light. And so, yeah, that turned in from a joyous experience and a fun experience to an absolute nightmare, not because the kit's bad. The kit's amazing and their instructions are incredible, but because I was having to cram it in and when I was tired and you know, in a situation that wasn't ideal. So that is a fair point. There are lots of people in that situation where they're working all day. The last thing they want to do is sit down and build a kit when they're tired, mm-hmm. and they just want to relax. For some people it's relaxing, for some people it's not. Yeah, no, that's a good point. I think you've raised a good point there about the fact that it is a niche, like the DIY thing is niche. And I guess that's one area where I'm hoping, and I haven't played with it yet, I'm hoping something like the Red Roo could potentially change that. Because as I said, there's no soldering.
Really?
Well, because there's no soldering required. And again, I don't know how it's going to perform yet, but from what I've heard, I can't remember the price off the top of my head, but it's not crazy expensive. And for whatever you're spending on it, to be able to get a box, all you have to do is literally go click, 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 click with some wires. So there's wires that join certain circuit boards together, and then you just screw it all into the casing and it's done. And you screw the transformers onto the box. That's in the output transformers. If it's as simple to put together as I think it's going to be, and if it performs to the level that I've heard rumors that it might, then all of a sudden I think it could be something, because it could be something where, you know, if you've got an enthusiast, or not an enthusiast in the hobbyist sense, but someone who wants to try out a tube amp and they want to go into something that's decent to start with. They don't want it to start with a, you know, Dark Voice 336 SE, which nothing wrong with them, but they're basic. And they need different tubes, in my opinion, to sound their best. So you've got to then go and hunt for tubes. If this is doing what I think it is, then someone can say, right, I just want to buy a tube amp that's going to do a great job with my speakers and my headphones. I don't want to think too much about it. I don't want to spend too much money on it. I'm happy to click it together if it's simple, if the end result is a great sounding amplifier. So that's going to be the question, is if it sounds great. So that could be a, you know, it's dropping the entry cost, but still giving you the performance for very minimal effort is what I'm hoping. But we'll see.
Okay, so you're basically talking about hi-fi at the IKEA level.
Kind of, yeah. It's a flat pack tube amp.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
And that's where I think it's kind of interesting, don't you?
And that would be really cool. I think I think you're onto something there.
And now that you've turned it into the IKEA idea, I'm going, what else could be done that way?
Imagine if we could get a hi-fi system that performed something like something 10 times the price, and it was flat-packed.
And it was so easy to put together. It's like an IKEA kit where you just open it up and you've joined the dots. That'd be cool. Yep. I mean, you can already buy flat-pack DIY speakers. That's a thing. Now it seems you can buy these, if it's assuming it's as simple as I hope it's going to be, you can buy a tube amp to drive those speakers. I don't know about DACs. We've got to see if someone's going to make a flat-pack DAC. But, hey, we could be honest. This is copyrighted. No one steal this idea.
I really do think that there's a bit of... there's something to be said there because, if aside from the fact that people look, people don't really want to be too bothered with building a sort of a large scale this, that, or the other. Mm. But at the same time, those that would visit, the demographics that visit IKEA, it's everybody.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
And maybe instead of going and buying your Sonos compatible bookshelf speaker thing or your bookshelf that is a speaker from IKEA, instead you can go and buy yourself a nice pair of separate speakers, a couple of stereo speakers and a little amplifier to drive them, and away you go.
Mm.
I like that idea. Yeah. I have no idea how you'd make it work from a DAC point of view because, like, by the time the DAC board is made. And you've got a power supply that's often an external switch-mode power supply, the amount of effort you're taking out of it in terms of, I'm thinking from a manufacturing cost point of view, there is so little to do from an assembly point of view that one might struggle a bit.
Yeah. At the same time, if people are really sort of hell-bent on trying to make something like this work, they would probably spend a lot of money on getting the right sort of enclosure and all that sort of stuff. Mm. And look, they might buy the board or what have you, but at the same time they can then choose how they want it to look,
That's a thought.
And I guess decorating your house or whatever.
I don't know if you've seen these. If I can get it. Gisheli Labs make their amps with these wooden cases now.
Yeah.
And obviously, that's not something somebody can assemble themselves. It's really high-end joinery that they're doing there. But if you could buy, if you could choose to have your DAC and your amp and stuff in a nice timber to match your speakers, for instance, there could be a market for that for some people.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Or maybe we're crazy. I'm not sure.
Yeah, a little bit.
We'll see what people say. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens. The other thing I was going to say about the DIY thing that's come back to me since we started talking about it, the other thing about it is you build an emotional connection to the product that you don't ever get when you buy it. Like, I can't bring myself to let go of the main line and also the Elekit. Like, the Elekit I should be able to let go of. It hasn't got the same level of involvement. You're just soldering pieces to a circuit board. It's not like the mainline where you've literally made every single connection yourself. And yet, whenever I think about selling it, I'm like, oh, but I built that. It's not like I can't get rid of it because it's somehow, how am I trying to explain this? Like, it's not just a sentimental thing is what I'm saying here. Like, it also sounds good. So I'm not just saying I can't sell it because it sounds crap, but I built it. It sounds great and I built it. And there's that double whammy effect of that there's more connection to it. Like, there's a sense of enjoyment when I plug something into it and I'm listening, whether it's speakers or whether it's headphones, and I'm listening and going, this thing sounds great and I built it. It's kind of fun. It adds another layer of enjoyment to the music, for me at least.
You know what? I'm so down with the fact that that the most important thing is that you had identified that these people have a personal attachment to the product because that they designed it. They didn't design it, that they put it together.
Yep.
And look, there's, I would have to say that there's probably a dozen garbage movies that we've seen only just recently that have been only nostalgia.
Okay, yep, yep. Yeah, it's a fair point.
And if we're, it might not necessarily be as good as we remembered it to be, mm-hmm. but at the same time, maybe the fact that you put that hi-fi system together would make you want to keep it. Yep. I don't know.
And therefore maybe enjoy it that little bit more when you switch it on, because it brings back the memories that, hey, I made this thing that's giving me my music now is something that I made.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's an interesting thought. Interesting thought. We'll have to ponder that one. And I wonder if on that note, this is a nice close for today, to leave people pondering that one and thinking about DIY. Unless, did you have anything else you wanted to add on this episode, Chris?
Okay, so the one last thing that I wanted to say, and I always like to include a little thing that what I'm playing with at the moment.
Yes.
Okay, so at the moment, due to the fact that we have identified that the Chateau de Chris's hi-fi system has many a various power-related issue.
This is from your power box that you were listening to when we talked in the last episode, yes? And if people haven't heard that one, you've got to go and hear what Chris managed to do with his power box and his mains power.
So with that magic power box, I managed to plug the switch mode power supply that I was using prior to into the it was essentially I think I then plugged it into the switch mode was going into a very, very expensive power strip, which was which is how I got the reading of the from this mains power filter. And then I changed it to a iFi, and I'm quite happy to recommend it because it was a iFi.
The iPower, or whatever
silent,
it's called.
iPower.
Yep.
And it was absolutely silent. The moment I plugged in this iFi, I had absolute silence.
Wow.
And I have to say, I was bloody impressed. You know, the difference between the switch mode passing on all this power crap.
Yep.
Through the entire strip, which wasn't just affecting just the one item, but it was all of it.
Anything plugged into that strip, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, wow.
And then going into just paying, you know, $100 for a replacement power supply, it was money well spent. Yeah.
So the thing you're playing with is the iFi iPower, is that the...
So the thing I'm playing with is the iFi iPower, and when I say I'm playing with it, I was so impressed that I bought it.
Yep, nice. Yeah. I've actually thought about buying a few in the past for some of the gear I've got, but I've never... Like, I don't know if some of the products that I'd be replacing with the iPower, if there's actually a need for it, and I guess that goes back to that box you're playing with last time, actually told you that there was a need for it here, because obviously there's switch mode power supplies and then there's switch mode power supplies. Some of them are okay, some of them are crappy, so it's hard to know as well.
Just look, and you know, as someone who's been in the industry for
ever
decades, hearing that noise going through the power strip just made me feel like, oh, is that really what's going through the power strip while I'm listening to music? I can't have that.
Yep.
And just that one small thing made a bigger difference than, you know, your cable raisers and all the other things that people go, oh, you haven't got this, you haven't got that.
Yep.
I was really impressed.
Okay. Cool. Yeah. That's good to know. Very good to know. So there you go. Endorsed here. There's no sponsorships, I should add. If you want to sponsor us, let us know. but that's good to know, Chris. Thanks for sharing that one.
Yeah. And what about you? Anything from you?
I've been playing with speakers. This is a big new shift for the channel.
Oh, yeah.
Because I've been on Actives for forever. So I've been using a pair of B&O BLab 9s, which are currently for sale if anyone wants to look them up on eBay or Aussie Audio Mart. And the reason for that is that they're great speakers. I love them a lot, but they're just way too big for my room and they've got very low wife acceptance factor in my house. So they've got to go. And that's because I've got myself a set of Harbaths, the little P3 ESR XDs on my desk, and running them mostly from the Enlium Amp 23R, which is this insane, ridiculously expensive headphone amp and power amp. I'm just loving getting back into the world of passive speakers. I'd sworn off them for years because in a small desktop setup like mine, there's not a lot of great headphone amp power amp combos. Most of the time you're getting a great headphone amp and a great preamp, and so it made sense to feed that out to a nice pair of actives. Getting the Harbaths in, what I'm loving is the fact that I can now tweak with some of the tube amps I've got being speaker amps. I can start to tweak the sound with the amp. I can tweak the sound by changing the speakers. All of a sudden, I've kind of remembered the versatility that you get from a passive system where you can roll different parts of the system in and out. Whereas obviously with actives, your amp and your speaker are one. And so if you want to change it, you've got to change both because they're all integrated, of course. So that's the thing I'm playing with. And the Harbaths are really... I'm loving them in the context of the fact that I don't really know anything else at the moment. I haven't got any comparison points. From what I can understand, I've kind of started with a fairly high bar. So I'm looking forward to exploring that a bit more. I'm going to try and reach out and get a bunch of different speaker manufacturers to try and send me their compact kind of desktop bookshelf type speakers and start integrating some... Basically, what I think I'll end up doing is... focusing very much on near field. So not trying to do speaker reviews, but do near field speaker setup reviews only, because I'm still not set up to do floor standers or even large stand mount speakers aren't going to work particularly well with my setup. But I'm really looking forward to exploring the world of that more kind of desktop near field bookshelf type, like compact bookshelf type speaker setup. So that's the plan and loving it so far. Good fun.
So do you think that, you know, now that you've had really a hi-fi experience of being able to play with your passive speakers and your speaker cable then mm-hmm. and your amplifier and all that sort of stuff, do you think that you might be almost pressured to, well, not pressured, but indulging your, wanting to indulge yourself in more of the sort of hi-fi rather than head-fi way of things?
It's an interesting question. Not quite. And the only reason I say that is because of the lifestyle in our house. And that's why I've been into the head-fi world entirely, is that my music listening happens almost entirely in my office when I'm working. And it's largely because our house is set up in such a way and the way the house is laid out, there's really not a good place to put speakers. The way our living room's set up, there's not an ideal spot to put them. It's a lot of glass in the house as well. We don't have a lot of walls that I can use as a backdrop for the speakers. Is not quite the right word, but everything's glass, so you've got these really reflective spaces. There's not a lot of place for treatment of the room. And on top of that, we've got a two-year-old, nearly three-year-old walking around the house that, you know, I've seen too many speakers with damaged tweeters and dust caps that...
You know what? Your kids will get... you've got one, but my kids have never touched my speakers.
Really? Okay.
Three rooms with hi-fi systems in it, and they've never touched a hi-fi system.
Wow.
Never.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
I've had one time I put... It was a pair of KRK, studio monitors that I had. And the one time I put them somewhere within reach, he walks over and finger on the tweeter. Thankfully, the tweeter kind of bounced back to shape, so it was all fine. But, it's something I'm conscious of is even the BLab 9s, I can't move them out of my office because they've got the exposed tweeter within the acoustic lens on the B&Os. I'm not quite prepared to run that gauntlet just yet.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look. You know, I should have a disclaimer where family members outside of the inner family. Yes, there has been some experiences, okay. But at the same time, you know, when you've got something that they're all so used to,
mm-hmm.
it really is quite interesting just how uninterested they
yeah,
are.
Yeah, that's true. It's only interesting for the first few days or maybe a week, isn't it? Yeah. And it's, you know, it is one of those things that as long as there was a pair of eyes around each time to say, hey, don't go near that, then it wouldn't take too long for that to settle down. But yeah, look, I think I would love to get back into having a proper listing set up somewhere in the house at some point. But I don't know if it'll happen while we're in this house. Not that we've got any immediate plans to move, but, you know, inevitably at some point we probably will. And so that's probably when I'd actually think about it in the next house that we go to. While in the meantime, just sticking with my near field setup for here. I did have a crazy idea the other day about completely reworking my whole office, but I don't think that's going to be happening anytime soon. It's just too big of a job, and I'd have to lose some of the storage that I've got in here that I need, so maybe one day.
Well, I really look forward to hearing about the change to the office.
Okay. Maybe we'll talk about we can talk about that. Will it be interesting for people on the next episode? Let me think on that one. I don't know if it's going to be interesting for people because it's a cool idea, but unless you've seen the space and you can actually see what I'm planning, you know, I don't know.
One of my favorite things is seeing other people's rooms and how they've accommodated their hi-fi system, because it each time I can usually tell that, hey, I've been there before. Yeah, you know, I totally appreciate that. Blah, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah.
Yep.
It works. Yeah.
Yep. It's never easy. Like, houses are not designed for audio, so trying to accommodate it's always that challenge, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Makes sense. Very good. Well, I reckon we'll wrap it up there, Chris, and leave people hopefully wanting more. Fingers crossed. and we'll come back around in a fortnight's time and do it all again, hey?
Sounds good to me.
Thanks for joining us for today's conversation, and make sure you subscribe if you want to be a part of our next conversation in a fortnight's time. Don't forget that if you want even more audio-related content, you can also join me over on Passion for Sound on YouTube. Thanks again for joining us for today's chat, and we look forward to chatting to you again next time.